Just would like to remind you all that the Getting After Lefty Show and Mr. Vinsel Simmons are the sole owners of this interview. This interview will not be disseminated in any way, shape, or form, either via other podcast, printed matter, or broadcast. We are the sole owners of this interview, and if you would like to obtain permission to use this interview on your show or to put it in print, please contact the Getting After Lefty Show host Gary Gatehouse or Mr. Vinsel Simmons via the Getting After Lefty Show. And you can do that by using the Getting After Lefty Show email. And that email is gettingafterlefty@texas.usa.com. That's gettingafterlefty@texasusa.com. And when you use Getting After Lefty, it's all one word, and it's spelled G-E-T-T-I-N. After, A-F-T-E-R, Lefty, L-E-F-T-A-T-Y, one word. So that email again is gettingafterlefty@texas.usa.com. Contact us before you use this, and we'll see what we can do as far as arranging. And as far as the BBC and A&E television shows, if you wish to contact us to redo the show, Mr. Vinsel Simmons is, like he said, told me he is willing to sit down and discuss maybe sitting down with y'all and doing some more interviews via TV. Contact us and we'll see what we can do. Without further ado, I'm going to turn this over to the Getting After Lefty Show host, Gary Gatehouse, who conducted this interview, and we'll take it from there. Well, here it is Friday, and here is the second in the series of Jesse James' descendants' interviews with him. Today we have a great treat. We're going to be interviewing Mr. Vinsel Simmons, who is the grandson. That's right, the grandson of Jesse James. Now, this interview was conducted in a little courtyard. So you, in the background during the interview, you might hear maybe a train go by, or you might hear some birds singing in the trees. It was conducted outside. We thought that would be the best place to do it. It was kind of a nice day. We did it on a Sunday. Not many people going by the little courtyard, so we thought we'd do it out there, and had a great time doing it. Now, just to give you a little heads up, when any time Mr. Simmons, Vinsel Simmons, refers to Grandma and Grandpa, or Granddad and Grandma, that is actually a referral to Jesse James and his wife. After all, those were his grandmother and grandfather. Anytime he refers to J. Frank Dalton, that's a reference to Jesse James, because that was one of Jesse's aliases, J. Frank Dalton. And you'll see during the interview that Mr. Simmons refers to many different characters. Henry Ford, that was one of the many aliases that Jesse James picked up and used. He used over 86 of them in his life when he was on the road, when he was on the run, whatever, living in different towns and cities throughout the Midwest and South. So it's a very interesting interview. Some new things are revealed. Mr. Simmons brought along his DNA results that show without a shadow of a doubt that he is directly related to Jesse James. This was all done. Mr. Simmons will explain all of this. I personally looked at these DNA printouts and the letter that came with it. So I attest that they are true and factual. And we have something here that I think people who have followed Jesse James, who have followed Western folklore, who have seen different movies about Jesse James, who have seen different documentaries about him. This is all new information. This is information that is bona fide. It has been proven to be true. And this information, I think, will shine a new light on the life of Jesse James and his exploits via all the research that Mr. Vinsel Simmons has put into this. He has spent a lot of money, a lot of time, and a lot of effort to prove that he is the grandson of Jesse James. So without further ado, I'm going to plug in the interview, and we'll take it from there.
This is Gary Gatehouse with the Getting After Lefty Show, and we have a real treat today. It's a continued series of the truth about the real Jesse James. If you remember, we interviewed the great-grandson of Jesse James on our first show. Well, today we have the grandson of Jesse James. That's right, the grandson of Jesse James, Mr. Wenzel Simmons. Mr. Wenzel Simmons wrote a book, Jesse James, The Real Story, the grandson of Jesse James, and it's an updated version, the revised second edition. And Mr. Simmons has got information that shows beyond a shadow of a doubt, including DNA, that he is the grandson of Jesse James. And right now I'm going to introduce Mr. Simmons and let him just kind of start from where he started at 8 years ago, digging up this information about his grandfather, and just let him carry on there. So without further ado, I'll turn the microphone over to Wenzel Simmons. Mr. Simmons? Yeah. You wrote this book about Jesse James, The Real Story. What kind of got your juices going to get this investigation going?
Well, what got me going was Elizabeth James came to my home in 1976. Trying to convince me that Jesse James was my grandfather. And I said she had a mistaken identity. I didn't believe it. And it took me about 8 years in research, dealing with my family, going back and interview all the family, to find out that it really was true. And then I started matching photographs of the two families. And I came up with eight people in the two families that looked like twins, before it was over with. And by the time that happened, Elizabeth had passed away, and I never got to go back to tell her about it. But anyway, I've done a lot of research on it, and most of it's in the book. There's still some stuff I haven't told about it. But the DNA that was run up at Kearney, Missouri is all bogus. There's no truth in it. And I have done some that's accurate, you know, and I'd let anybody look at it. I don't care who sees it.
That DNA you're talking about, that was that research that Judge Rossi and a DNA expert out of New York,
yeah,
when they supposedly exhumed Jesse's body at the farm in Kearney?
Supposedly, yes, but they found no DNA in the grave that matched anybody. And when they gave the final reading, they came up with a tooth that was not in the grave. It got it somewhere else, which is not permitted as evidence. It can't be. The evidence they have to use had to come from that grave. It can't come out of a hearsay deal somewhere.
Right.
That's what they use, and supposedly it came up compatible to known relatives. You know, but I found out compatible don't mean a lot. You know, but anyway, the DNA I've done is from Susan James' great-granddaughter, which was Susan Hale, out of Bakersfield, California. I matched her DNA with Robert Jackson's down in Oklahoma. And the forensic guy told me he ran five separate tests between the two. In no way are they related. He said, in no way. He said, furthermore, the DNA that Jackson had was not worth the papers written on. It won't stand up in any court in the land. And, you know, that was kind of, you know, shocking to me that Jackson wasn't related.
Now, they supposedly compared his DNA to that tooth?
Yeah, that tooth.
And supposedly made
yes, it was supposed to be compatible to the tooth, his DNA. And so far as I know, he's not willing to give any DNA. And Judge Ross was approached down in Texas, the last meeting they had down there a few years ago, and he refused to give DNA also. So it's kind of strange, you know what I mean, why these people are this way about this.
Now, folks, I've seen Mr. Simmons has brought the DNA results and showed them to me. And you can see, beyond a shadow of a doubt, all the DNA study that he has done to compare his DNA against family relatives, etc., within the James realm, have all proved out to be hits. There's no doubt in my mind that Mr. Simmons is the grandson of Jesse James, and the study that they conducted down in Kearney here a while back under the auspices of the DNA expert out of New York and Judge Rossi and so on was absolute bogus. It was just absolute bogus beyond a shadow of a doubt, and I don't know from what I've seen why they would want to present that as the absolute evidence that that was Jesse James buried there. I don't know. I don't know if it's a cover-up to something else or what else, whatever, or just trying to put the legend of Jesse James and whatever to bed. But I get flat guarantee you, from what I've seen and what I've read in Mr. Simmons' book and the information that he has accumulated over the years, that the Jesse James legacy will live on through Mr. Simmons, because he has information here that will shine a light of truth on the whole story of Jesse James and his families, not just family, his families, and his brother Frank and his families. Folks, those guys didn't die when they were supposed to. They lived on. Mr. Simmons has absolute information on that and proof of that. And I'm going to let Mr. Simmons kind of expound on that a little bit and maybe cover some of those aspects of Jesse's life after the supposedly his demise when he was killed in St. Joseph. Vincent?
Yeah. What I was told by my family, he left and went to South America, and he was gone for 5 years. I know the marriage license he has with my grandmother, he married her in 1883. There was no children born until 1888. And I asked my cousin about it, why they had no children for 5 years. She said, well, he was gone to South America for 5 years. I said, well, I didn't know that. But anyway, he came back in 87. Then the first child was born of eight kids that he had with my grandmother. And the youngest one was born in 1907. And my grandmother was probably getting close to 48 or 49 years old at the time. Anyway, Grandpa was 10 years older than Grandma, is what my mom told me. But, you know, as far as my research on the whole deal, you know, I got the photographs that anybody can look at, scrutinize all they want, and I have the DNA that they're welcome to. Anybody, anytime.
Now, with Jesse was supposedly shot and killed in St. Joseph, Missouri, and was buried. You found out that the fellow that actually was buried in that box was a guy named Charlie Bigelow.
Yes, that's what they said.
And Charlie Bigelow was a... was he a member of Jesse's gang, or did he know Jesse?
One time he was, and they had a falling out, and I understand that him and his brothers was going around robbing banks and blaming Frank and Jesse with the robberies. Now, and they got tired of it.
Now, the guys that supposedly shot Jesse, the Fords, were they actually friends of Jesse's, and was they a part of Jesse's cover-up?
They were with him in several bank robberies, and they also were involved in a cover-up.
Now, the Fords, when they supposedly shot Jesse James, and they buried Bigelow,
mm-hmm.
Whatever happened to the Fords? Were they arrested, or were they for doing that? Or
they were put in jail, I understand, overnight, I think. Then they were turned loose, and supposedly they were supposed to get the reward, and some say they never got it, that the governor never gave it to them.
And in the meantime, did Jesse leave St. Joe at that time and go somewhere else?
Jesse, I don't think, ever lived in St. Joe at that time. He was only here to do what he did, and that was get rid of the Bigelows. There were three of the Bigelows done away with in his barn the night they came in at midnight. Two of them were buried in Lawson, Missouri, in the cemetery. Their tombstones are there. You can go see them. And Charlie looked enough like him that they used him for Jesse's double. That's what I was told.
Well, once that all went down and Jesse, they buried Bigelow, where did Jesse go from there? Did he?
He went to South America for 5 years.
Okay, that's a story.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. He went there for 5 years. Then he came back, and him and Grandma had eight children, mm-hmm. one about every 2 years, right up to 1907. That was in Morgan County, you know.
Missouri.
Yes, sir. Morgan County, Missouri, yeah.
But Jesse's been under many aliases, some say up to 80 aliases.
There's no telling how many aliases he had. There's no telling how many children he had.
What are the more famous aliases he used?
Well, the one he lived under from, that I know, from 1883 until he died in 1950, was Jacob Benjamin Gerlt, which is a German name. And his brother was Hiram Howard Gerlt. That was Frank James.
Okay. Did Jesse also use the name Dalton, didn't he?
Yeah, J. Frank Dalton is the name he came out under in 1948 when he came to the Merrimack Caverns.
Yeah, if you folks remember the first interview I had with Dan, he kind of expounded on when Jesse came out and had his birthday down at the caverns there. Mr. Simmons has some pictures of Jesse holding a revolver during that birthday party. And it's if you look at the picture of Jesse James when he was 102 at that birthday party, and you look at and I'm looking at him right now, face to face of Mr. Simmons, you can tell beyond a shadow of a doubt. You can take it to the bank. You can bet your bankroll on it. That was his grandpa. Because I swear, these two guys look the same. No doubt in my mind. And what Mr. Simmons has accumulated to bring us all to the conclusion sitting at the table here today, there's four of us sitting here, that Mr. Dalton, Mr. Gerlt, and Mr. James, and plus many other aliases, it's all the same man. And he did live beyond the supposed killing in St. Joseph, Missouri, and died in 1950.
Yes.
At an age of 102 years old and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived a long life. He fathered a lot of children that are scattered throughout the United States, and their descendants are. And Mr. Simmons has spent many, many years bringing this all together. And for anybody, this is my own opinion now, for anybody like Judge Rossi and his cohorts to put that bogus investigation together to try to undermine Jesse James' legacy, in my mind, is a sin, because the book I'm looking at, the evidence that has been presented, there's no way in hell Jesse died in St. Joseph, Missouri. And he went on ahead, and like I said, had a lot of children, and raised some beautiful children and a big, huge families. And Mr. Simmons here has got more information, more stories that would probably fill a New York phone book full of information. And somewhere down the line, Mr. Simmons and whoever else can be involved plans on putting this all together in a format that we can all understand, and presenting it either through a vehicle in Hollywood or through a major network, or somehow get this information out and bring the true story of Jesse James to light so we all can know about it. Because that is a big part of the folklore of this country, whether you want to believe it or not. Jesse James had an influence on a lot of different segments that we're involved with today. Mr. Simmons has a real nice story about some information that was involved about the name Ford, and I'll let you take it from there about some of the information you found out tying Jesse into that name.
Well, the Ford thing come about in the spring of 1922, and my mom and dad was still living at home with Grandma and Grandpa, and four men came down there to the farm. Dad said he didn't know them, hadn't seen them before, but they were driving a brand new Model T Ford. And Grandpa took him back to the Standing Rocks on the farm and showed him where to dig the money up that was loaned to the Ford Motor Company in 1922. And Dad said he'd never seen them people before and he hadn't seen them since. But he did take me there where they dug the money up on the old farm. And I found the bell from one of the iron kettles that was filling the hole where they took the money away. The money was brought back to St. Joe, Missouri, to the German American Bank, and they transferred it to the Ford Motor Company. That was in the spring of 1922, which would have been about this time of year. He said the corn was just about that tall.
A couple inches tall.
Mm-hmm. When they did it. And, you know, who knows? They might not be a Ford Motor Company if it hadn't been for him.
Well, see, there you go, folks. That's more information that you won't hear anywhere else. It's probably, if it's out there, it's probably being covered up. And I know Jesse got around. He spent a lot of time in Texas. Mr. Simmons told me some stuff about when he was down in Texas. Can you kind of touch base on that a little bit?
Oh, well, they say he was using the name Henry Ford in Texas, in Brownwood, Texas. He was there for many years, owned part of the bank there in town. It's a Ford, Cognate, and Martin Bank. And he faked his death there in 1910 and left there. And as far as I know, came back to Missouri and stayed the rest of his life. Of course, my mom said whenever she was a little girl, she barely knew her father. He traveled all the time. She didn't see him sometime for a year. He'd be gone. But I guess he was a restless person. He traveled all over the world. But according to what I know, he did loan Ford the money to get back in business when Ford went broke in 1922.
Okay,
yeah.
Well, you know, Jesse James, your grandfather, when he was a young man, I've read a little bit about him, but he was a very young man. Him and his brother both fought in the Civil War, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Now, did they fight on the north or the south side?
As far as I know, it was the south, mostly, with Anderson and Bloody Bill, Anderson and Quantrell. They were with them quite a while. I know Frank helped burn down Lawrence, Kansas, but they say Jesse wasn't with them.
Now, did Jesse fight in the battle down in Lexington, Missouri?
He was there when the war ended. He came there and tried to give up, and they tried to kill him. Shot him through the right lung, and they left, and they sent him home. And from then on, he never tried to give up. You know, he figured there was no use. So that probably started the bank robbing years.
Well, who was it that kept coming to Jesse's mom's farm, the family farm, and kept harassing her to a point at one where they finally blew up the house and blew her arm?
Well, that was the Pinkerton agents. They were looking for Frank and Jesse. They blew the house up with a bomb and killed their little brother and blew her arm off. That turned out to be the Pinkertons that did that.
In later years, didn't they have a big reward out to turn over information to Jesse to a certain person? $100,000, I think you said.
Well, the Fords claimed they would turn up Jesse and Frank both for $100,000 in cash. If Pinkertons would give them $100,000 in cash, they could show them both of them. And Ford wound up getting blown away with a double barrel shotgun.
So that ended that story real quick.
That got rid of that story, yeah.
But how many times, I think it's in your book and I forget it, how many times was Jesse wounded over his lifespan?
Man, I couldn't tell you. They undressed him down at Merrimack Caverns. He had a lot of bullet scars on him. The one that I knew about, the right lung was gone. My mom said he never had a right lung as long as she knew him, just the left lung. He was shot through the right lung two times. And from then on, I think he wore a bulletproof vest because they had one at the Merrimack Caverns that belonged to him. It's still down there, matter of fact, that he gave him when he was there.
In a museum?
Mm-hmm. It's still there. But you can see bullet dents all over that thing. And he had a bullet in his right thigh when he died. I remember that. He kept dragging the right leg and couldn't lift it off the ground. Back when me and my dad took him to Columbia, Missouri in 1947 and left him with his oldest daughter, he couldn't lift the ground off the ground, the leg. I had to help him get in the truck. And he set his cane in over his leg. And then I was in the center, and he kept picking on me with his old black fingertip on his left hand, which you could still see at the Merrimack Caverns.
Yeah, I've seen the picture.
In the picture, yeah.
That's where he was shot in the finger.
And I didn't know what was wrong with his right leg until I got the Pinkerton records and checked them. And it said that he was shot in the right thigh in Northfield, Minnesota, and carried that bullet the rest of his life. They couldn't get it out.
He was also shot through the...
Yeah, through the mouth.
Through the mouth.
Be on the left side, and it came out and shot the end of his front teeth off.
And folks, if you look at pictures that were taken of Jesse after he was supposedly killed in St. Joseph, Missouri, there are pictures that show kind of an indentation in the side of his face where one would surmise a bullet maybe passed through there. You don't see that indentation in his younger pictures before he was shot there when he was 14, 15 years old, but in later years after he was shot, you can see that indentation. That is an identification of Jesse in later years along with his deformed finger that was also shot.
Yeah.
And you can see that in pictures because Jesse has a unique set of hands. He's got long, skinny fingers, and he has got a deformed finger that it shows up in a lot of pictures of him back when he was in his 40s, 50s, 60s, all the way up until he was at his birthday party when he was 102 years old. So this information that Mr. Simmons has got is the true information. It's the information that, I don't know, people just don't believe. They want to throw it out, cover it up, whatever. But I'm here to say that Vince, Mr. Simmons, is not going to let that happen. And that's why I wanted to put this as an exclusive on our show, because it's whatever I can do to help him get the word out, the real word out about his grandfather and the folklore that is involved with it, I'll do it. I'll do it. I promise to do a mini-series, so we'll have many shows involving either Dan, the great-grandson, or Mr. Bensel, the grandson of Jesse James. And I've already told them both that I'll air it every Friday as long as we have information that he wants to get out there, new information, whatever. I'll cut my regular show short and put that on, regardless of what it is and how long it takes. I'm here to help Mr. Vince will get the word out, the true word out. This thing that went down, like I said a couple of times in this interview that was conducted by Judge Rossi, was an absolute lie. And Mr. Vince's DNA, this sheds a light of truth on all that. And we're going to take a break now, and we'll be back in a second. So stand by. This is Getting After Lefty Show, Friday edition. We've got to take a break to pay some bills, let our sponsors have their word and say, and we'll be back in a second.
Hey, this is Gary Gatehouse for the Getting After Lefty Show, just reminding you to tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday and listen to Gary. He's up there talking his butt off and going after those people on the left, tooth and nail. And you know dang well you like to hear him do it, don't you? So don't forget, Getting After Lefty, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Just Googling, Getting After Lefty. That'll get you there. See you then. Hey, this is Gary Gatehouse back at you. Interesting interview, is it? Now, Mr. Simmons, I understand that you have a lot of photos and a lot of DNA that you've just recently got back. And also, would you expound a little bit on the murder of Jesse James, or the supposed murder of Jesse James, and just where the information you found?
But, you know, as far as my research on the whole deal, you know, I got the photographs that anybody can look at, scrutinize all they want, and I have the DNA that they're welcome to. Anybody, anytime.
Now, when Jesse was supposedly shot and killed in St. Joseph, Missouri, and was buried, you found out that the fellow that actually was buried in that box was a guy named Charlie Bigelow.
Yes, that's what they said.
And Charlie Bigelow was a... was he a member of Jesse's gang, or did he know Jesse?
At one time he was, and they had a falling out. And I understand that him and his brothers was going around robbing banks and blaming Frank and Jesse with the robberies. Now, and they got tired of it.
Now, the guys that supposedly shot Jesse, the Fords, were they actually friends of Jesse's, and was they a part of Jesse's cover-up?
They were with him in several bank robberies, and they also were involved in a cover-up.
Now, the Fords, when they supposedly shot Jesse James, and they buried Bigelow,
mm-hmm.
Whatever happened to the Fords, were they arrested, or were they for doing that? Or
they were put in jail, I understand, overnight, I think. Then they were turned loose, and supposedly they were supposed to get the reward, and some say they never got it, that the governor never gave it to them.
And in the meantime, did Jesse leave St. Joe at that time and go somewhere else?
Jesse, I don't think, ever lived in St. Joe at that time. He was only here to do what he did, and that was get rid of the Bigelows. There were three of the Bigelows done away with in his barn the night they came in at midnight. Two of them were buried in Lawson, Missouri, in the cemetery. Their tombstones are there. You can go see them. And Charlie looked enough like him that they used him for Jesse's double. That's what I was told.
Well, once that all went down and Jesse, they buried Bigelow, where did Jesse go from there? Did he?
He went to South America for 5 years.
Okay, that's a story.
Yeah,
okay.
Right. He went there for 5 years. Then he came back, and him and Grandma had 8 children, mm-hmm. One about every 2 years, right up to 1907. And that was in Morgan County, you know.
Missouri.
Yes, sir. Morgan County, Missouri, yeah.
But Jesse's been under many aliases, some say up to 80 aliases.
There's no telling how many aliases he had. There's no telling how many children he had.
What are the more famous aliases he used?
Well, the one he lived under from that I know from 1883 until he died in 1950 was Jacob Benjamin Gerlt, which is a German name. And his brother was Hiram Howard Gerlt. That was Frank James.
Okay. Did Jesse also use the name Dalton, didn't he?
Yeah, J. Frank Dalton is the name he came out under in 1948 when he came to the Merrimack Caverns.
Yeah, if you folks remember the first interview I had with Dan, he kind of expounded on when Jesse came out and had his birthday down at the caverns there. Mr. Simmons has some pictures of Jesse holding a revolver during that birthday party. And it's if you look at the picture of Jesse James when he was 102 at that birthday party, and I'm looking at him right now, face to face of Mr. Simmons, you can tell beyond a shadow of a doubt. You can take it to the bank. You can bet your bankroll on it. That was his grandpa, because I swear these two guys look the same. No doubt in my mind. And what Mr. Simmons has accumulated to bring us all to the conclusion sitting at the table here today, there's four of us sitting here, that Mr. Dalton, Mr. Gerlt, and Mr. James, and plus many other aliases, it's all the same man. And he did live beyond the supposed killing in St. Joseph, Missouri, and died in 1950.
Yes.
At an age of 102 years old and a half.
Mm-hmm.
And he lived a long life. He fathered a lot of children that are scattered throughout the United States, and their descendants are. And Mr. Simmons has spent many, many years bringing this all together. And for anybody, this is my own opinion now, for anybody like the Mr. Judge Rossi and his cohorts, to put that bogus investigation together to try to undermine Jesse James' legacy, in my mind, is a sin, because the book I'm looking at, the evidence that has been presented, there is no way in hell Jesse died in St. Joseph, Missouri. And he went on ahead, and like I said, had a lot of children and raised some beautiful children and a big, huge families. And Mr. Simmons here has got more information and more stories that would probably fill a New York phone book full of information. And somewhere down the line, Mr. Simmons and whoever else can be involved plans on putting this all together in a format that we can all understand and presenting it either through a vehicle in Hollywood or through a major network, or somehow get this information out and bring the true story of Jesse James to light so we all can know about it. Because that is a big part of the folklore of this country, whether you want to believe it or not. Jesse James had an influence on a lot of different segments that we're involved with today. Mr. Simmons has a real nice story about some information that was involved about the name Ford, and I'll let you take it from there about some of the information you found out tying Jesse into that name.
Well, the Ford thing come about in the spring of 1922, and my mom and dad was still living at home with Grandma and Grandpa. And four men came down there to the farm. Dad said he didn't know them, hadn't seen them before, but they were driving a brand new Model T Ford. And Grandpa took him back to the Standing Rocks on the farm and showed him where to dig the money up that was loaned to the Ford Motor Company in 1922. And Dad said he never seen them people before and he hadn't seen them since. But he did take me there where they dug the money up on the old farm. And I found the bell from one of the iron kettles that was filling the hole where they took the money away. The money was brought back to St. Joe, Missouri to the German-American Bank, and they transferred it to the Ford Motor Company. That was in the spring of 1922, which would have been about this time of year. He said the corn was just about that tall.
A couple inches tall.
Mm-hmm. When they did it. And, you know, who knows? They might not be a Ford Motor Company. It hadn't been for him.
Well, see, there you go, folks. There's more information that you won't hear anywhere else. It's probably, if it's out there, it's probably being covered up. And I know Jesse got around. He spent a lot of time in Texas. Mr. Simmons told me some stuff about when he was down in Texas. Can you kind of touch base on that a little bit?
Oh. Well, they say he was using the name Henry Ford in Texas, in Brownwood, Texas. He was there for many years. Owned part of the bank there in town. It's a Ford, Cognan, and Martin Bank. And he faked his death there in 1910 and left there. And as far as I know, came back to Missouri and stayed the rest of his life. Of course, my mom said whenever she was a little girl, she barely knew her father. He traveled all the time. She didn't see him sometime for a year. He'd be gone. But I guess he was a restless person. He traveled all over the world. But according to what I know, he did loan Ford the money to get back in business when Ford went broke in 1922.
Not a damn.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Jesse James, your grandfather, when he was a young man, I've read a little bit about him, but he was a very young man. Him and his brother both fought in the Civil War, didn't they?
Yes, they did.
Now, did they fight on the North or the South side?
As far as I know, it was the South, mostly, with Anderson and Bloody Bill, Anderson and Quantrell. They were with them quite a while. I know Frank helped burn down Lawrence, Kansas, but they say Jesse wasn't with them.
Now, did Jesse fight in the battle down in Lexington, Missouri?
He was there when the war ended. He came there and tried to give up, and they tried to kill him. Shot him through the right lung, and they left, and they sent him home. And from then on, he never tried to give up. You know, he figured there was no use. So that probably started the bank robbing years.
Well, who was it that kept coming to Jesse's mom's farm, the family farm, and kept harassing her to a point at one where they finally blew up the house and blew her arm?
Well, that was the Pinkerton agents. They were looking for Frank and Jesse. They blew the house up with a bomb and killed their little brother and blowed her arm off.
Folks, you can just see there in the interview that Jesse James and Frank James and his mother and father, that would be Vinsel's grandbrother and grandfather, you know, Jesse and his wife, they didn't have a rosy life. They were constantly being chased. Jesse's mother had her arm blown off by the Pinkertons, standing in the front door of her own home. So they all that stuff that that you see in the movies where it's all nice and shiny and rosy and all this, that's not the true depiction of how things went down with Frank and Jesse. We're going to take another break. We'll get back to the next part of the interview in a second.
So, you're listening to the Getting After Lefty Show with host Gary Gatehouse. Gary will be back in just a moment. This is Gary Gatehouse with the Getting After Lefty Friday Show. This is an exclusive interview with the grandson of Jesse James, Mr. Simmons. And we're going to talk a little bit about J. Frank Dalton now. He's got an interesting bit of information here that I think probably hasn't been heard about by most of us, probably most all of us. And I'm sure the media hasn't said anything about it. I know damn well Hollywood hasn't said anything about it. So it's some information he wants to pass on to us about J. Frank Dalton, and it's going to be very interesting. So sit down and have a listen.
Yeah, the J. Frank Dalton exhumation, I guess you'd call it. Anyway, we goes to Granbury, Texas to exhume the J. Frank Dalton body to get some DNA from it to match up with the Jameses. And we get there, and they start digging the grave up where the tombstone was sitting, the J. Frank Dalton or Jesse James tombstone, whichever you want to call it, was sitting. They uncovered the grave with the backhoe, and when they got it uncovered, they run onto a steel vault, which still had blotches of gray paint on it. Now, this is supposed to have been buried there since, you know, 1951. And I told Mr. Hardcastle that they're digging up the wrong grave, because the records state in Granbury he was buried in a redwood casket. The total funeral bill was like $150. It was never paid by anybody. Anyway, they're digging up this high-dollar steel vault. Well, sitting on the bank is a tractor that would probably lift 10 tons. And I don't understand what it was there for, except the fact I was told by Jesse the Fourth one time that there was a vault full of gold that was 3 foot by 7 foot, buried down by Waco, Texas. So I'm figuring whoever dug this grave up must have tucked their metal detector to the steel vault and found out it was nearly the same size, so they decided that Jesse buried the money in the cemetery right beside him. See? So anyway, when they dig the vault up, they took the big tractor. You know, they had a bobcat there that would have lifted it. You know, a body in a metal casket ain't gonna weigh that much. But for some reason, they want to take this great big tractor and hook on these straps and take the vault out and swing it around to put it in the van. And when the six guys got a hold of the vault, it didn't go down, it went up. And I told Hardcastle, I said, there ain't no $425 million in there. You know. But anyway, the city took over. They took the casket. They went to an unknown location with it. They blocked the road to the cemetery where we couldn't even follow them out. Yes, they blocked it. And it was 10:30 the next morning before I found out where they took it to open the casket. Took it to one of the city buildings there in town. When I get there, here sits Hardcastle. He's not permitted in the room where they're, you know, opening the casket. because he might contaminate something, they said. So anyway, I don't know, maybe 11:30, the city official came out and said, well, they had opened the casket, and it was a male Caucasian with one arm off, missing, you know. And I don't know of anybody that knew that Jesse James had one arm missing. He sure never had one missing last time I seen him, you know. But the guy they dug up had one arm missing. Come to find out, they got a hold of his nephew or something. They almost got in a lawsuit over it. Well, they dug in to the corner of the Redwood casket. That's how close they was to it. It was on the south side of this metal one. Now, why didn't they go ahead and just exhumate that casket and get some bones out of there to do some DNA with instead of covering it back up, you know? Didn't make any sense to me. But anyway, that was the end of the J. Frank Dalton deal.
So they never really did get to dig up?
They never did get to dig up the J. Frank Dalton body.
Did they refuse to go back and do that? Or
they evidently did. I think in Hardcastle tried to do it. It's never been done to my knowledge. So there's no end to that deal. You know what I mean?
So it's still an open book.
It's still an open book, whatever's there. But the thing is, how could J. Frank Dalton and my grandfather appear to be the same person when my grandfather was buried in 1950 and J. Frank Dalton was buried in 1951, almost a year later?
Yeah.
And my understanding is there's like 300 people at the J. Frank Dalton funeral when they buried him the first time there. There was a lady by the name of Alla Overheard that was a cousin of Jesse's. And she kept him at her home after he became bedfast and couldn't walk. She kept him, she bathed him, she fed him. When she came to view the body at this funeral, this Haupt guy wouldn't let her see the body in the casket. And they said she kept getting phone calls. She'd get close up there in the line to view the body. He'd have somebody calling her on the telephone. She had to go answer the telephone. That happened a couple times. When she came back, she was at the end of the line. She was kind of walk up to view the body. And Hauk told her he'd blow her head off if she didn't get away from there.
Damn.
He never let her view the body. That tells me she would have known it wasn't Jesse James.
Sounds like it.
In that grave. Because she kept him for 6 months and fed him and bathed him. She damn well would have known what he looked like. But she was not allowed to view the body. You know, that's another little mystery.
Yeah, that's, like you said, it's an open book. And if they were to exhume that body, who is that guy?
Yeah, who is that guy? Let's exhume that body and do some DNA work and find out who this guy is.
And that's down where?
Granbury, Texas.
Granbury, Texas?
Mm-hmm.
You heard of Granbury, if you're listening to my show, let's dig that dude up and see who he is. I'm sure it isn't Jesse, because Mr. Simmons knows where Jesse is and knows that he died in 1950 at 102 and a half.
Yes, and he's buried in our home cemetery.
Buried in the home cemetery. So there's a lot of open books, folks, that Mr. Simmons has been running a lot of investigating on. And he's found a lot of information, and all these books need to be closed out. And those folks that keep perpetuating this to the fact that it's not true, they better step up and prove it isn't. That's all I got to say, and I know that's what Mr. Simmons would say too. Well, this is Gary Gatehouse with the Getting After Lefty Show. This concludes the first interview, exclusive interview with Mr. Vincel Simmons. He has really shed the light of truth on a lot of stuff, and a lot more light needs to be shown. You know, I always say on my radio show that those folks that like to hide from the truth, they're like vampires. They only come out at night. You know, vampires, they only come out at night because the sunlight will burn holes in them. You know, you've seen them in the old movies where they got the cloak and they'll hide under that cloak, or they'll go hide in a cave somewhere. That's the same way people don't want the light of truth shined on them. They'll go hide under their desk or go hide in a cave somewhere or spread a lot of false rumors and untruths. Mr. Simmons here is here and here now. He's got all the information, DNA, whatever, and he's going to shine the light of truth come hell or high water. So all you folks out there that are treading water or hiding out under your desk or in the caves because you don't want the light to be shining on you, get ready because we're coming. This is Gary Gatehouse for the Getting After Lefty Friday show. I'm signing off. Make sure you say hi to any military guy out there that's got a uniform on. Tell him thanks for serving his country. And thanks for his family doing the sacrifices they're doing for our country. Until Monday afternoon, this is Gary Gatehouse with the Getting After Lefty Friday show. Signing off. See you Monday.
Picture I wanted to show you.
He wants to get some stuff put on here though. This would be better.
Yeah, this is an authentic photograph. Everybody in the world agrees it is.
Yeah.
But that's the same person.
Yeah, it is.
Hell
yeah. Yeah, you can tell.
You can see it.
The chin and everything.
Everything.
Yeah.
That is.
You can even see it in her.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, it's the same guy.
That's the same guy. See? And you know,
when I was telling Dan, I don't know if you guys got around up there around Bowie, Texas. Did you get up around in that area?
No.
North Central. It's the same. It runs right adjacent to the Chisholm Trail.
Oh yeah.
And there's a place out there on the way to Bowie. There's a little highway, Highway 49. And on the way to Bowie, there's a little town called St. Joe. St. Joe, Texas. It's
yeah.
St. J-O, St. Joe.
I'll be damned.
And I just wondered, well, how in the hell did St. Joe, Texas get down here on the Chisholm Trail in north central Texas? It's right, you know, you go about 80 miles north of there and you're on the Oklahoma line, right,
mm-hmm.
right at the river. And I often wondered, how in the hell St. Joe, Texas
there? I think they left the Hansel and Gretel Trail every place they went.
Might have.
Now here's a picture. That's a picture postcard that was sent to Grandma, my Grandpa, in 1915.
This one?
That one there was. And I've matched that. That's Jesse Irwin and his wife, uh-huh. Stella.
I matched that picture of hers. She wrote a book in 1971. Uh-huh. You take that picture and put it here, same damn woman, same man. Now, here's the picture a guy in Philadelphia has of him. That was taken about 1890. This picture here was of Jesse Edward, mm-hmm. and this is about 1915.
That's the same guy.
Same guy. Yes. On the bottom of this picture, he had the picture that's over here in the front where Grandma is with them kids. He had that damn picture stapled on the bottom of that postcard. And I cut the son of a bitch off. Picture of those two kids uh-huh. with that mourning belt around her. Him and her was right here on the bottom. See, I took it off. Yeah. I didn't put it in the damn book.
Somebody's saying, this is us. Yeah,
yeah, this is us.
Growed up.
And it says to Dad on the back of the postcard, you know, and he used this name, Frank Hockaday and Leona. See them names? Uh-huh. That's the two names they used down there in the hills. This guy had $12 million in gold bars in the bank in California in 1915.
That's where the old song come out.
Put all them off in the bags?
No, all the money's buried in, all the money's in the bank in California in somebody else's name.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I've heard that.
Now, that money disappeared, by the way. The Mexican government sued him to get this money back. And he was in a lawsuit up until 1920, for at least 5 years.
There again.
He died. This is another thing. Judge Ross's grandfather, Jesse Edward James, supposedly died in 1951. My mom and his grandpa, all of them got their inheritance from this guy in 1959, 8 years later.
Yeah.
They got $98 apiece out of his estate. I figured that one out. Where in the hell did the $12 million go?
Yeah.
See? Yeah. Hmm. I'm thinking that they took that money. My thinking is, the research I did, I think Maximilian's money is where this came from. See, the Shepherd brothers, the two James brothers, and a Mexican was hired to bring that money out of Mexico by Maximilian. The story I got from one of the Shepherds sons said that when they got into southern Texas, they camped around a place they call Horsehead Crossing in a river bottom. And this Maximilian and the Mexican friend was behind. They hadn't came out of Mexico yet. But they sent these guides out with 30 guys guarding these wagons. There were 15 freight wagons loaded with this damn money. And that son of a bitch was going to go back to Spain. He was defecting, you know, taking all the money out of Mexico. So he gets up there. They said these Mexicans got in a fight. They got to kill one another. They had about 4 or 5 cases of that tequila, and they drank all that stuff and got in a fight, and there was 12 of them left. And they sat down there and sat drunk in these trees. And the two James brothers and Shepherds. They just shot him and buried the whole damn works right there. Buried the wagons. I'm thinking sometimes they might have burnt the damn wagons. How do you bury that many wagons?
Be awful hard. They go
be hard, wouldn't
wagon,
it?
Yeah.
So anyway, when the last Shepherd boy that was involved, just before he died, he gave his son a map where this money's supposed to be. And told him, he said, don't go down there in the summertime. The rattlesnakes will get you. They're thicker than hell. Because they buried this in these bluffs, all these boxes of gold, and where them snakes was. And he said, go in the winter time. And I guess it was maybe this time of year. He buried his dad, and he takes off. He gets down there, said he had 200 rounds of ammunition. And he's riding this damn horse, and he got in there where this stuff's supposed to be buried, and the damn snakes was laying over on the rocks that came out in the spring. He starts shooting them bastards. Shot up all the shells and the stench from them, he threw up everything in him. He had to leave there. So he goes back in the winter and buys 400 acres there of land. He turned it into a sheep farm. Spent 4 years looking for this money. He found some of the old empty boxes and a few skeletons. Never found the money. Well, who knew the money was there? You know what I mean? Shepherd, the Shepherd brothers and the James brothers. They moved it.
That's what happened. I'm telling you.
When that last one died, they moved that damn money. And they had to melt it, you understand, because the coins were Maximilian's profile. They were 1 ounce of gold and silver coins. I've never seen one. I do have one, $2.5 one, you know, that Elizabeth gave me. But I wanted it 1 ounce, see. I kept asking if we might have 1 ounce. Nobody come up with it because they probably melted them all. See, they got rid of their identity. Melted them back into bricks. That damn money went out there and was in that bank for all them years. Well, you see, okay, if he got sued in 1915, he's in it for 5 years, my uncle told me. And I said, where'd the money goes? He said, nobody knows. He said, the Mexican government. I said, they ain't going to let the Mexican government have it. Even the U.S. government ain't. But I said, on the other hand, he's in it till 1920. I'm thinking Grandpa went out and got the money, took it out of the damn bank, brought it home. And that's what he went for in 1922. See, that makes sense to me. If you go down there where them rocks is in this book, I'd show you all the holes in the ground where the damn stuff was buried at. There's about 5 or 6 big holes around. They're this deep pit. And that goes around where they dug something out of there. But see, Ford, it wouldn't have done him no good, a few dollars. It had to be quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And one of the wells is from right here. Came down there. Y'all bring the money right back here to the German American Bank. And they took it from there to Ford, see. But Bill Ford won't tell me nothing. He went up there, checked the records. They told him they're out, they were gone.
I had them the first time. I found them. They wouldn't let me top them. But the machine was broken. I had to come back the next day. And I took all the information down. I went back. I didn't go. I was leaving that night, and I didn't go back the next day. I come home. I went back. Went back to find the folder. They said they had a flood. They'd send them all to New York to be freeze dried. I went back a third time. I found them. They had a bunch of cartoon postcards. Same number. Same. I wrote everything down. The German American Bank had loaned Ford all the money. And the Kushners run it, and the Kushners are big right down here. In the turn of the century, they had 103, I think it was, banks and 6 savings and loans. Worth almost $1 billion. That was 1900.
Gets bigger and bigger, don't it?
Yeah. Well, that something happened to that money out there. See, now somebody got rid of it in 8 years. You know, he supposed to die in 51. How in the hell they have an administrator? Uncle Charlie gave me the letter from the administrator out there that his check was in, his $98 check. You know what I mean? And they act like they don't even know us. God damn it! That guy right there. Uncle Charlie about killed him once, the last time he was at home, down there on the creek. They had some kind of a damn problem. What he done, he came and made this damn movie, Under the Black Flag, 1923, and he was broke. And he went to New York and tried to promote it, and he lost all the money. Even the people put their money in it with him. He came back broke, so he goes back to Grandma and Grandpa to get more money. Well, shit, they had done read the newspaper by then. So he comes in there that night, and they get up the next morning. Before daylight, he's not there. His suitcase is there, but he's not there. So Grandpa got to wondering about him. So somehow or another, he goes over where the big rocks are, and he catches up with him over there. Well, he shot at him 5 times with a pistol. And Uncle Charlie said, well, he couldn't hit him. He said, me and Will was laying in the road ditch, and somebody's come off the hill and across that road in high gear, he said. Run up to the house, got his suitcase, started to come out the front door, and Uncle Charlie got too damn anxious and he shot at him. He said it blowed splinters all over him, right off the door facing. He hit the goddamn door facing. So some of us turned around and went out the back door and kept the house between them, see, and left and got away. That's the last time he was ever there. So he wouldn't want that story told. You know, Judge Ross never heard that story, I'm sure. But the son bitch sure done it. And the Baileys, Bill Bailey and his brother used to run with him, Robin Banks. They come right after he left. And they was madder than hell about something. He took something from them. They want to know where he's at, and they said, he just left. And Uncle Charlie said, they took right after him, but by God, they never caught him. They catch up with him. But I said, Uncle Charlie, where'd you go? He said, ah, the son of a bitch went to California. He said, if I knowed where he's at, I'd go kill him right now. I said, hell, he's dead. He said, he might be dead. I don't know. You know. But that was the reason for a lot of this problem, see.
Yeah.
He come back down there.
He was quite a bit older than the rest of the kids. He was like 18 years old.
Yeah, Mom said when she was a little bitty girl, he'd come and bring her a new dress or something before this ordeal took place, see. And she knew him as Francis L. Hockaday. But there was a mystery about him, see. There was always this mystery about him. And Aunt Nett's daughter, up here by the new airport, last time I talked to her, she said, I would walk in the room when Aunt Nett and my grandma was talking about him, and they'd just shut up. They would say no more. She said, I said, well, who was his father? Who was his mother? She said, nobody ever knowed. They always said that when Aunt Nett's sister was his mother, and they didn't know who his father was. Well, that's all bullshit. You know, because right there he is, you know. And the pictures matches. This Francis L. Hockaday matches Jesse Everdink, the key. So does his wife. See, I've checked it. So
that's an amazing story.
It is amazing. But
they're the one that made off of most of it.
Oh, hell. Something happened to what made it out there. And I'm sure it belonged to Mexico. See, it goes like blood. You can trace it anywhere. You dig it out of the ground anywhere, you can trace it back.
Sure you can.
And some Mexican got hold of one of them bars, found out it came, you know, from the Maximilian deal, and they tried to get it back, which was only natural.
You remember Ralph Hernandez?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Well, you saw him last time. He was the oldest guy in Missouri on death row or whatever, murder. They never put him on death row, but he was a murderer in 97 when they caught him.
Right there's where...
He used to tell me stories about Maximilian all the time, being in, I mean, Ponce de Villa's army. And I didn't understand what he was trying to tell me.
Yeah, see, it was Ponce de Villa that was with him. Yeah. That's who it was. They never would say. None of them would say. They just say a Mexican priest.
That's why I asked you, you know? Why you called this getting after Lefty, because he was Ponce and Lefty.
Mm-hmm. Jesse was there's Lefty. Them rocks. That's the original photograph. That's Grandpa in the middle, and that's Uncle Frank here, and that's one of Mom's brothers there. Uncle Will, that one on that side. But that goddamn hole I got the bale out of is right there, at the bottom of it. Got an iron bale off an iron pot.
Where's this at?
Down on the old home farm.
Southern Missouri.
Where my mom and all the kids were raised. See, that's
stayed
in our
these
family.
These maps I got, one of the lines start from right down there.
And that's his.
Comes
that's
all
him.
Way up there to St. Joe.
I got that grandma's picture box after she died. And two mules there. Uncle Charlie named them both. He said, I used to plow corn to them some bitches down the river bottom. You notice that coat? This button on the top.
Top button.
Got that top bottom open on it.
Mm-hmm. Looks like you might have something down in that pocket.
Yeah, you got something in that pocket. Probably his little whiskey bottle. He carried one of them little flat ones in his inside coat pocket. Mm-hmm. I remember him taking it out and drinking of them. There's a picture I got. That's Aunt Mamie and her husband, Sam Robinson. This is two halls. They had him right here in St. Joe when that picture was taken at the Jesse James Hotel. They took that damn picture.
I had the picture
but
for a long
shit,
time.
Look at that, them two guys.
Jesse James Hotel. I ended up getting
you know, he was in his 80s here. There's one other telltale. See how rounded his knuckles are? They're
uh-huh.
rounded.
Yeah.
You can see it there when you look at his hands.
Yeah.
They're real rounded. Real skinny fingers. Hell, I went over all of them with a fine-tooth comb. Here's an interesting one. Read that little article. Jackson County Historical Society's got that picture and that information.
If it ain't destroyed, they destroyed a lot of it.